fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. UFC Central. UFC Central with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Welcome to UFC Central. I'm your host, Showdown Joe. For the next hour, we're going to talk some mixed martial arts, UFC, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. And yes, if you probably already noticed, I am still suffering the effects of this cold that has been with me for about 10, 11 days now. I am at the tail end, so hopefully I will sound better. I read some remarks and heard some stuff from some of the fans that were watching UFC Central, the television side, saying I shouldn't even be in, but really? Can I call in sick to doing this job? No, I can't call in sick. So lots of stuff to talk about in the world of mixed martial arts. If you saw the show, George St. Pierre joined us. We have the full interview here, at least the clips from the interview, courtesy of Nancy Adet from TVA Sports. She was the one who helped us out to get the interview overdone. She was taking care of some stuff for her, and we said, listen, if you're there, do you mind? George obviously obliged, so we had some questions that were posed over to George St. Pierre. We'll hear from George momentarily. We'll also hear from Dana White. Now, Dana White was on with Boss Rutten on Access TV's HD or Inside MMA, and Boss asked some really good questions, and Dana gave some really good answers, or some interesting answers that perhaps we can dissect a little bit later on in the show, a little bit later on after the George St. Pierre stuff. Boss and Boss's interjections were absolutely fantastic, and there's one I really liked from Boss that I may or may not agree with until I actually get to it, so we'll get to that momentarily. We'll also hear from Dana White when he was over in Asia. Lily from Asian MMA, or MMA in Asia, excuse me, was able to interview Dana, and Dana gave some thoughts on a variety of issues, namely how this whole Tyron Woodley thing situation occurred with him replacing Hector Lombard, with Hector Lombard injured, and Tyron now taking on Dong Young Kim, some additions to Fight Pass, and of course the importance of the market in China, specifically Asia as well. We'll get to those a little bit with Dana, with Boss, Dana with Lily. We'll also hear from Cub Swanson, who's headlining the show in San Antonio versus Jeremy Stevens, a little funny situation when I spoke to Cub in that conversation, but you'll understand why when you hear it. But this Saturday, the UFC starting off in Fight Pass in Auckland, New Zealand, ending on Sportsnet 360 in San Antonio. You got a full day of fights, and it's headlined by Cub Swanson, Jeremy Stevens. When you think about this fight in the featherweight division, the winner of this fight will likely take on the winner of Chad Mendes and Jose Aldo Jr. Should Chad Mendes defeat Jose Aldo and Jose Aldo not get a rematch, and or if Jose Aldo defeats Chad Mendes, don't be surprised if Cub Swanson inserts himself into that title picture, or Jeremy Stevens, if he does emerge victorious, he gets that title shot. And we want to, before we go on to anything else in the show, before we get to George St. Pierre, Dana White's thoughts, and Cub Swanson, a special congratulations to Toronto's own Joseph Valtellini, who became the glory welterweight champion of the world last Saturday, defeating Mark DeBont. And what many people are saying was a controversial decision. I believe it's a case of, you know, almost short-term memory. You forget what happened 15 minutes ago, and you score a fight based on what's happening at the end. In my opinion, Joseph won the first three rounds. He lost the last two rounds. Problem is when a guy ends up losing the last two rounds, that's what many people remember in the crowd and some of the media. They look at, oh, he lost the fight. Well, no. If you score the fight the way it's supposed to be scored, Joseph won the first three rounds. You can make the argument that maybe DeBont could have got one of those three rounds. If you do that, then yes, in your opinion, Mark DeBont should have won the fight. But in my opinion, Joseph won the first three rounds, lost the last two rounds. He wins 3-2. Doesn't matter when you win the rounds, but once you win those rounds, it goes on the judges' scorecards, because those scorecards are handed in immediately after the round. Judges cannot go back and change their scores. That's the beauty of judging, believe it or not. You know what? I was just thinking of something else that maybe we'll have later on the show or in a future show. Perhaps an article I'll be writing for Sportsnet.ca regarding the importance or the difference and the future of scoring versus judging. We'll get into that a little bit later on. Hopefully, you're starting to understand some of the seeds that I've been planting here on UFC Central Radio, some of the stuff I've been saying on the television side, some of the articles and tweets, different people that I've been interviewing. I believe the future in scoring, or I believe the future in mixed martial arts is scoring, not judging. I'll have a better explanation as we move forward in the future. Nonetheless, congratulations to Joseph Valtellini. He was supposed to join us on this week's show, but after all the hard work he's put in, he decided to take a trip to the Caribbean to get some vacation time, some well-deserved vacation time, and asked specifically if we could do it next week. So if all goes well, Joseph Valtellini will join us on the show. I'll I'll likely be in Vegas, so I don't know if I'll be able to connect with Joseph, but if possible, we will have Joseph on the show next week. If not, maybe the following week thereafter. Either way, congratulations to Bazooka Joe. Make sure you follow him online at Bazooka Joe. All right, so George St. Pierre was over in Montreal, and Nancy Adair from TVA was able to sit him down and ask him a few questions on behalf of UFC Central. And the very first question she asked him was, you know, obviously, he had surgery recently. How was the surgery, and how was the rehab going?
I had my surgery in April. I'm now 10 weeks. Since my surgery. The way it's gonna work is I'm gonna do my first 3 months in Los Angeles for my rehab, and then the following three other last month I will come back in Montreal and do it in Montreal at home.
So, George will be doing most of the rehab at home, but if you look at some of the online videos with George, he's looking pretty good. So the question was basically asked, you know, how are you doing, and what is the latest? Because you look absolutely fantastic doing all those pull-ups and all that jazz.
I'm doing very well. If I compare it to because I did my right knee before, my right knee came back even stronger than it was before. Mm-hmm. So I hope it will be the same with the left one. And I'm actually doing very well right now. I can't feel better than I am right now.
So there's a little glimpse right there as to how George St. Pierre is feeling, and is he really going to come back? We just don't know. But like you said, if his left leg or left knee is stronger than what it was before, just like his right knee is, well, then he's a stronger fighter. He's a better person. Age is obviously a question here, but that's another story for another day, or maybe not, and as we continue this conversation with George. So the bottom line is, will he actually come back and compete for the UFC? Where is his head at right now?
I don't know if I will fight again for the UFC. I took a break. I call it a break because I didn't know if I wanted to come back or not. I needed to step outside the octagon to find fun doing this again. You know, I didn't have fun doing it in my last couple of fights. I felt when I was going to train, I felt over-pressured. A lot of pressure, critics, a lot of expectation, you know, and tension. I felt I was going to train. I felt like I had to instead of feeling like I wanted to. So if I need to find that fire back. If I ever come back, I needed to find that fire back, and not to come back the same, to come back better than I was when I left.
So with all things being considered, is he actually getting better than he was before? Is he feeling better than he was before he left and relinquished the title?
Physically, I had no problem. I could fight maybe for another 20 years. You know, I don't have any problems, you know, except just my knee. But once it will be taken care of, it will be no problem. The thing is just, it's mental, you know. Do I want to do this again? We'll see. You know, it's a lot of variable. It depends on not only on me. It depends on a lot of things in my life. And we'll see. But one thing for sure is I will always be involved in the sport. I'm always going to train and stay in tip-top shape.
And that's no joke because George is always training. I could vouch for that for sure. But now that he has taken some time off, is it helping him? Is it exactly what he envisioned it to be?
You know, I grew up like everybody else. I learn new things all the time, and I get more mature. I'm 33 years old now. I feel better than I ever feel, and yeah, I'm very happy right now. You know, I needed to take that time off. I had to take care of a lot of things in my life, and I'm doing it right now. A lot of things that I could have done, I could not have done during my career because I was so busy fighting. Now I'm taking care of a lot of things. If I come back, I don't know if I will, but if I will, I will be better than when I left up.
And notice how he stresses the if, trying to be very careful in what he says. But one of the things he's been doing, not just taking care of himself, but taking care of his training partners, Francis Carmont, Rory McDonald, getting them ready for their fights. And Rory just recently fought an amazing fight versus Tyron Woodley. And George was asked specifically, what are your thoughts on Rory McDonald and that performance versus Tyron?
I think Rory, not only because he's my friend and training partner, I think Rory is the best man in the world right now at 170. And he did an incredible, masterful performance. He shut down Tyron Woodley in an incredible way. People doesn't understand fighting sometimes, and they had a tendency to criticize Rory's performance. the way he controlled him, it was unbelievable. He took away Tyron Woodley's best weapon, which is his big right hand, and he took the fight where he wanted to be. You know, Tyron Woodley is a very explosive guy, has a very big muscle. You know, it's like a car. If you have a big engine on a car, mm-hmm. you burn more fuel. And very like stalk him, you know, control the distance perfectly, stay away from his big right hand, control the fight, stay in that perfect range, and took the fight from there.
It's hard to disagree with George, especially considering that I was there live, really, really close to that fight, next to the Octagon in media row, and watched Rory McDonald put on a performance that I really didn't see coming. I mean, it was just masterful. I know he's got all the skills in the world. I know he's an absolutely fantastic fighter. But to be that good against a guy like Tyron Woodley blew me away. Like, you know when somebody is good and you expect them to do good things, but then they become great right in front of you? And that was a great performance by Rory McDonald. I was completely blown away. Now, listen closely. George St. Pierre specifically said that he believes that Rory McDonald is the best fighter in the world at 170 pounds, will be the future one day, will be the champion one day. Not nothing you haven't heard before. We also heard George talking about it earlier on, how he wants to gain some weight, and specifically that guys are walking around much bigger than him when he was the champion, and it's important for him to pack on some pounds. The question was re-asked, though, by Nancy Audette. Specifically, you know, you're George St. Pierre. You want to put on weight? You know, she called him a sex symbol. I guess that means you're already looking good. Why would you want to put on weight? You want to put on weight for real?
I want to gain weight. It's not only for competition. It's not only a competition thing. Men, most men want to gain muscle mass. It's like a man thing, you know? Like, I'm a man, you know? I don't, you know, I want to get more muscle. That's a good thing. And if I plan to ever come back, I used to walk at 170 pound all my career, you know. So I know guys that in welterweight division in UFC, most of them are bigger than 200 pound when they're off season. So if I ever, you know, come back, I needed to gain some muscle weight. I have a very large frame that made me look bigger than I am, but I was a small welterweight.
So what does this all really mean when you think about it? If you try and piece together what George St. Pierre is trying to say, it's not easy, obviously, because George is the only one, maybe the closest guys to him, whether it's Faraz Ahabi or his management or his lawyers and his agents, they know what George St. Pierre's plans are. At least they may not. We don't know. George truly knows, or maybe he just doesn't know because he's just living this life right now the way he's wanted to live it, despite the fact that he was champion of the world. But if you start dissecting certain things and trying to figure out exactly where he's going with his career, one has to assume. I'm a firm believer that he's not coming back. Maybe he's not coming back anytime soon. Maybe he's got a plan to put on some weight and then determine whether or not it's feasible to come back at a much bigger weight and then cut down to 170 pounds, do a test cut or a couple of test cuts to see what the muscle mass, what it means. He's obviously on numerous occasions talked about Roy Jones Jr. Roy Jones Jr. making the mistake in his career, or George believes the mistake that Roy made in his career was fluctuating in weight, competing in different weight classes, and how he was never the same when he started to do that. So if George St. Pierre is putting on weight, does that mean A, if he comes back, he'll come back to 170 pounds? B, if he comes back, will he come back at 185 pounds? What if Rory McDonald is the champion at 170 pounds? Does George really want to come back and compete at welterweight and have to earn a title shot and or jump in right away and jump into a title shot and take on a friend of his, a training partner, a teammate, a guy he helped mold into becoming the champion? I personally think it's a no. If he does come back, it'll be because Rory McDonald, A, isn't the champion. B, George wants something to prove. He wants to defeat Johnny Hendricks. Maybe he thinks that original fight with Johnny Hendricks, and you know he wants to leave it without a shadow of a doubt that he is the better fighter and not have it such a close fight, despite the fact that his head wasn't in that fight. He said it on numerous occasions. He's told me. We've had it a couple times in interviews. Or C, maybe he comes back as a middleweight. Now, I know he doesn't want to fight Chris Weidman. I know that. You know, he likes Chris Weidman, but is he as close to Chris Weidman as he is to Rory McDonald? No, not necessarily. But maybe he comes back at 185 pounds. There's a certain Anderson Silva that'll be coming back real soon at 185 pounds. I mean, they're talking Nick Diaz versus Anderson Silva. That's a fight Dana White would be more than happy to put on. There's a lot of variables and options for George St. Pierre, regardless if he comes back to mixed martial arts. But like Dana White always says, believe it or not, and George, I'm sure, would probably disagree or agree either way, let the stars align. The stars have to align. Certain things have to happen to trigger George St. Pierre coming back to mixed martial arts. But there's the latest on George. That's the interview that Nancy did on our behalf. It remains to be seen what George St. Pierre plans on doing. If you want more, you can ask him yourself. He's heading down to the UFC Fan Expo next weekend in Las Vegas as part of the two events and two-night show, the UFC 175 show, featuring Chris Weidman defending his title versus Lyoto Machida, Ronda Rousey defending her title against Alexis Davis, who, by the way, next week on UFC Central, will be profiling Alexis Davis. And at the same time, the next day, it's BJ Penn taking on Frankie Edgar, the finale of the Ultimate Fighter this season here, which, you know, hasn't been the greatest season, if you ask me. I mean, I love the show. I've always been a big fan of it, but this has been a very difficult season to digest, to say the least. You know, hopefully things flip around in the final episode. We don't know. We'll see what happens in the finale. Maybe a star can be born, but that's another story for another day. George St. Pierre will be at the UFC Fan Expo, to my understanding. You get a chance to sign get an autograph signed by George, take a picture with him, maybe ask him yourself, are you coming back? And I'm sure he's going to be asked that 1,000 times, depending on how long he's available for fans, because you know every fan will probably, not every fan, but the vast majority of fans will ask him that very question. All right. As I mentioned earlier on, Dana White was on Inside MMA, and Boss Rutten, legendary Boss Rutten, former UFC heavyweight champ of the world, one of the baddest men on this planet, then and now, if you ask me, had a chance to sit down with Dana. They discussed a variety of issues. The very first of which is a brief statement by Dana White, was the whole Scott Coker situation, being hired by Bellator, replacing Bjorn Rebney, and Boss flat out asked him, listen, Scott Coker, you know people are going to ask you this question. Scott Coker, is he the right fit? Is he the right guy to run Bellator?
Well, not only do I know Scott very well, I know the guys at Spike very well. You know, I was in business with them for a long time, and I think that this is a much better fit for them than Bjork was.
Well, another party shot by Dana White towards Bjorn Rebney. You know, to me, it's an unfortunate situation. Anytime you come up with a business, it's a risk that you take when you bring in bigger partners with big money to take up a bigger percentage. That's what happened to Bjorn Rebney. They made the final decision, the new partners, obviously Viacom, Spike TV, to say, you know what, Bjorn, you got to go. And they bring in Scott Coker. Now, in my eyes, I thought to myself when this first came out, and I spoke to Spencer Kite last week from Sportsnet.ca and UFC.com about this, thinking to myself, wait a second, we bought Strikeforce. We know Scott Coker comes with the package, and now we're going to basically put him on the side because he really didn't do much when he was part of the Zuffa category or Zuffa organization. I'm sure there was a non-compete clause. He couldn't do much. He couldn't do anything. And then as soon as that non-compete clause was gone, next thing you know, boom, he pops up with their competition again. So it remains to be seen what will happen with Scott Coker as the new boss for Bellator. Will things change? Will they consider still be, you know, competitors, although I don't believe they're competitors, but they are. They're the number two organization, at least in the eyes of North American fans. So it remains to be seen what Scott Coker's plans are and what he does over there with Viacom and Spike. But nonetheless, Dana White continues to run his business. It is what it is. And part of his business right now is dealing with the whole TRT thing and some of the hearings that took place at the Nevada State Athletic Commission with Chael Sonnen and Vanderlei Silva. And what does he make of all this? What is Chael Sonnen is gone? He retired. Vanderlei Silva, are they what's going to happen with Vanderlei Silva? They're going to have another appeal, another hearing. I mean, it's a big mess. And Boss Rutten asked Dana White specifically, can you supersede the commission? Can you create your own? I mean, what can you do here to change all this?
I just don't know how you'd supersede the athletic commission. I mean, I don't know. We'll see what happens. But you're basically ruined when you get... Chael Sonnen had to retire. He's retired now.
Yep.
You know how much money that guy could still make in fighting in MMA and in the UFC? Tons of money. He's gone. He retired because of, you know, what went down. Yep. Vanderlei Silva, it was very odd the way it was handled the other day, but I'm pretty confident they're gonna bury him deep.
Oh, okay.
So. I just don't know what else you could do to him. I mean, other than publicly stone them or, you know, beat them with sticks. I mean, there's what else could you do to these guys? Yep. Financially, they're going to be destroyed. Their sponsors, I mean, everything, their reputations, it all goes.
And there's much more with Chael Sonnen. We'll hear a little bit more later on in the show with Dana White talking about Chael Sonnen and what Chael Sonnen will be up to next. It's a very difficult scenario when you think about this, but Chael Sonnen, like I said earlier on UFC Central last week, especially on the TV side, that look, you know, he knew what the risks were when he took those banned substances. The goal, I guess, was a fertility thing to get his wife pregnant. It actually worked. If that's the case, congratulations to Chael Sonnen. Good for him. But in terms of his mixed martial arts career, it's a big risk. I'm sure he knew what the consequences would be. He got caught. He's done. He's retired. But I maintain there's a method to Chael Sonnen's madness. I am not convinced that he is gone for good. That's just my opinion. We'll see what happens. As for Wanderlei Silva, that's a different beast altogether. And it's hard to disagree or even argue the point with Dana White that, you know, the commission could be making a huge example of Wanderlei Silva. I'm not in depth in these conversations. I'm not able to get behind the scenes to get more information. Wanderlei Silva's people aren't getting back to me. And the commission stuff is all public knowledge anyway. So it remains to be seen what's going to happen. I originally stated this guy could be suspended for 24 months. They'll make a precedent out of him, maybe 18 months. Again, it just goes to show you that they'll likely be doing something pretty big here. But if that is the case, I mean, Wanderlei Silva is basically done. To take that much, if he gets suspended for 18 to 24 months, he's done. He's not going to be able to come back and be as strong as ever. He's already in the twilight of his career. You can make that argument. So it remains to be seen what will happen. But if he does get a lengthy suspension, that will likely be it for Wanderlei Silva. Another guy whose name came up in this whole conversation with Boss Rutten and Dana White was UFC light heavyweight champion John Bones Jones, who recently stated, you know, the UFC used bully tactics to get him into the situation with the renegotiation of the contract and or getting that fight with Alexander Gustafsson, that rematch, which, by the way, has not been announced for Toronto. Here's what I got from the UFC when I spoke to them when I was in Vancouver. Despite the fact that the UFC announced that UFC 170, I think it's 176 or whatever the number is for Toronto, I believe 178 if I'm not mistaken, was announced for Toronto, and then a subsequent press release came out and said John Bones Jones will take on Alexander Gustafsson at UFC 178, if that's the example. Nothing on that second press release announcing the rematch stated Toronto. So what that basically means is they're either going to have another event and renumber the Toronto event, or it is actually the Toronto event. You have my word. Once I know exactly what the UFC is planning to do, I will let you know via Twitter at Showdown Joe, Facebook at Showdown Joe, perhaps Instagram at Showdown Joe, via UFC Central Television and the radio side. But nonetheless, Boss Rutten asked Dana White specifically about John Jones's comments, and here's what Dana White said.
We sit down and we try to make everybody happy, but this isn't boxing, man. In boxing, these guys run away, and they tried to make Floyd Manny 7 years ago.
Yeah.
Fight still hasn't been made.
Yeah.
We make fights. That's what we do. I read a real stupid article by a real stupid journalist recently where he was talking about how I get whatever I want, and I'll make sure, and he called me the czar of the UFC. That's my job.
Yeah.
My job is to put on the fights that people want to see. If there's an overwhelming amount of people that don't want to see Jones Gustafsson,
yeah,
then I probably wouldn't want to make it. One more thing. If you are the light heavyweight champion, you are the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world. You shouldn't have to be bullied into fighting anybody.
Nobody. And you should fight him also in his hometown. That's what I was thinking.
You fight him anywhere, anytime, any place. It's just that's when you're the champ and you know you're the champ and you know that you're the baddest man on the planet. And he says he wants to go down as the greatest fighter of all time. Well, then you take on all comers. Yep. And if there's any shadow of a doubt that this guy might be better than you, you prove to the world that he's not.
Well, easier said than done, in my opinion, especially if you're considered the fighter. But I understand it from a promoter's point of view. I also understand it from Boss Rutten's point of view when he says, you know what, go fight him in Sweden. Well, that, in my opinion, is a little easier said than done as well. If it was Boss Rutten wouldn't care where the fight would take place. He had an amazing career in Japan. He fought over here over in the States. Boss Rutten would take on all comers anytime, anywhere. It made no difference. Not so much the case for some of the fighters nowadays, only because if I'm John Jones, if I'm the light heavyweight champion of the world, and my options are Sweden, Las Vegas, Toronto, or any... I am taking the place as far away from the hometown of my challenger as possible. What I don't want is a situation where a judge or judges could be biased if that fight goes the distance. The last thing you need is that when you're defending your title. I would want it in neutral territory or in my home territory. I'm the champion of the world. I will do whatever I can to try and get that fight done. That's the way I would look at it. Now, Boss Rutten, you know, obviously one of the greatest, in my opinion, of all time, He'll fight anyone. He'd fight a Japanese, or he did fight Japanese stars in Japan. He fought anywhere and anyone at any time. He fought Kevin Randleman when Kevin Randleman was basically at his peak as a mixed martial artist in the States. I mean, he doesn't care. Boss Rutten doesn't care. That's a different story. Each fighter will do whatever it takes to win. But if I'm the champion of the world, let me tell you one thing. I'm going to try and do whatever I can to get the fight in my home territory to give me any sort of edge over my opponent. Make him get that headache. I don't want to be the champion and head over to Sweden and deal with that headache. But that's why I host a TV show and I'm a radio show host. It is what it is. It's up to John Jones, up to the UFC. It is what it is. From the UFC side, perhaps it's a business thing. If they hold it over in Sweden, they get this massive stadium gate, and they can do something with pay-per-view. Does fantastic numbers on pay-per-view because of the time zone change. Regardless, hey, it's good for business. That's what Dana White is hoping to do. That's what Dana White, Lorenzo Fertitta, Joe Silva, and the whole Zuffa brass are trying to do. It's the bottom line, trying to make money here. So there's so many variables that go in there, but it is what it is. Now, in terms of making money, Boss Rutten asked specifically to Dana White about Jose Aldo's recent comments, again, where he may have stated or apparently or allegedly stated that he's not happy with the money that he's making. Again, Dana White was forced to address this issue, and here's what he had to say.
Everybody, it's human nature. Everybody needs to make more money. A guy like Jose Aldo, love Jose Aldo, he is the pound-for-pound best fighter in the world for two rounds.
Yeah.
Then he starts to, you know, he starts to slide off. And you know what? He is. Here's the reality. The champions are pay-per-view partners. So, and how many pay-per-views you sell and how big of a draw you are, you get a piece of the action.
And as lightweight fighter, do they have less pay-per-view buys?
Yeah, they don't sell as much as the bigger guys. And a guy like Jose Aldo is a guy who has the, I think, has the talent and the ability to be a big star. So it's up to Jose Aldo to get out there and make people care and want to buy his fights.
Now, this is a topic that I've been discussing over the years at length, and I've got my own opinion about this. I've had some people tweet me with their thoughts, and listen, I am the first person to tell you all the time, everyone is entitled to their opinion. But my opinion will be coming up next, as well as more from Dana White and Cub Swanson, who's headlining the show on Saturday night. You're listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. UFC Central. UFC Central with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Welcome back to UFC Central. I'm your host, Showdown Joe. We're talking mixed martial arts, UFC, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. As always, special thanks to 40 Sons for the theme music for UFC Central, the radio show, and the podcast. The song is called Hurricane. You can check it out on iTunes. You can check out 40 Sons at 40 Sons on Twitter. And don't forget, if you miss an episode or a broadcast or a podcast of UFC Central, you can subscribe on iTunes. You can visit sportsnet.ca/590. Just subscribe. Simple. Look up UFC Central, and we'll do the best we can to bring you the latest and greatest from the world of mixed martial arts. You can also follow me on Twitter, at Showdown Joe. Now, like I said before, Dana White was with Boss Rutten, did that interview. He was also in Asia to talk about a bunch of different things as they're promoting the big fight cards that are taking place over there. And there's three things that caught my mind or caught my ear when he was being interviewed by Lily from MMA in Asia. We will get to that momentarily, but I want to give you my thoughts on what was just said momentarily in the as we close off the first segment there regarding Boss Rutten, Dana White, and Dana White addressing Jose Aldo's comments that he's not making enough money. This is the fight business, okay? The whole situation that the smaller fighters don't make as much money as the bigger fighters, that's just been how it usually has been in the world of combat sports, unless you start looking at guys back in the day like Eric Morales in boxing and a bunch of different smaller fighters. Floyd Mayweather, guys, weighs 145 pounds when he competes, okay? This is the number one pay-per-view draw in the sport today, in combat sports today. It's Floyd Mayweather. The difference between Floyd Mayweather and the gentleman, Jose Aldo, who happens to be also at 145 pounds. And for those boxing guys out there, if I'm wrong about Floyd Mayweather's weight, I apologize. Pretty sure it's 145 pounds. The difference between Floyd Mayweather and Jose Aldo Jr. is obviously a lot of zeros, a lot of money, but Floyd Mayweather is out there non-stop in the various markets that buy the pay-per-views. Floyd Mayweather is selling. So in my opinion, now, I've had conversations with some of the Brazil staff for a few different organizations. Some people that know Jose Aldo very well. The same thing with Hayden Barão. These are the type of guys that don't care about the media. They could care less about the media. They'll do it because it's an obligation for them. They have to do it. But in order for selling themselves, they have the belief that they're fighting will sell. Well, obviously the fighting is fantastic. It is unbelievable. It is great, but it's not transcending. It's not turning into dollars. It's not adding in their bank account. The reason being is fans, mixed martial artists, media guys, guys that follow the sport, girls that follow the sport, they want to be attached to someone. They like someone that is larger than life. George St. Pierre, larger than life. Number one pay-per-view seller for the UFC. Brock Lesnar, Chuck Liddell, Anderson Silva, John Jones is getting there, Ronda Rousey is getting there. These are characters that are larger than life. Jose Aldo Jr. is not coming across as larger than life. He may be big in Brazil, which is fantastic, but you got to be big around the world. You got to step out of your comfort zone and realize this is a full-time job. What you don't want to do is look back, when you're 30s and 40s and think, oh, this is what I should have did. Shoulda, coulda, woulda. Do it now. I say it all the time to some of the fighters that I meet nowadays. There's so many on the UFC roster that simply don't understand the whole circumference, the whole ball, the whole picture of prize fighting. They believe it's just simply get in the gym, train, fight, promote when I fight, and that's it. You can't rely on the Ultimate Fighting Championship to promote 500 guys. Even though there's 8 or 9 champions, you can't rely on the UFC to promote them. They'll bring you up. Like, for example, with Cub Swanson taking on Jeremy Stephens, Jose Aldo's name is going to come up. Chad Mendes' name is going to come up. But Jose Aldo should be out there. If the featherweights are fighting, he should be doing TV stuff, radio stuff, continuing to get his name out there. The power of the media, whether it's especially television, ladies and gentlemen, television is huge. The internet, radio, it's huge. You got to be in the forefront. You got to constantly be in the headlines, because if you're not, people will forget about you. Out of sight, out of mind. You're going to be off their radar. They will come back at and pay attention to John Jones. They'll pay attention to George St. Pierre. They'll pay attention to somebody else. If Jose Aldo really wants to reap the benefits, in my opinion, of making huge amounts of money, which he 100% deserves, and considering the fact that he's a pay-per-view partner, like Dana White said, you got to sell. You got to be able to sell yourself. That's the game right now. We could talk about all you want that the UFC should be paying the fighters more money. Heck, I agree with that. The UFC should be hammering these guys with more money. But it's not my business. It's not my business model. The business model is completely different for the Ultimate Fighting Championship as a promoter than it is for a boxing event where so much more money is made for the fighters. Not as much as you think, by the way, but they do make more money in certain areas. Like a Floyd Mayweather, that is absolutely astronomical. That is the top of the food chain. Manny Pacquiao is another one like that. You want to sell in this sport, ladies and gentlemen, if you're a fighter, male or female, you got to get out there. You got to do your media hits. You got to be in the public's eye. The hardcore fans are going to buy or watch the pay-per-views no matter what. You don't want those guys. You want them, but you also want the mainstream person. That person you see at the gas station when you're filling up gas in your car. The mother, the daughter, the son, the father at the supermarket, your dentist. That's the people that you should be trying to train. Those are the people that would come to me and ask, hey, George St. Pierre, what's the latest with him? Is he fighting what about his opponent? Those are the people. When George St. Pierre used to fight, ladies and gentlemen, I would be bombarded with requests from family members, people that would stop me in the street. Anytime George St. Pierre breathed, anytime he did anything, I would get stopped all the time. I don't get stopped by people talking about Ronda Rousey or John Jones. When Brock Lesnar was the heavyweight champion of the world, people all the time wanted to see him fight. That's what it was like with George St. Pierre and Chuck Liddell. You have to transcend the world of mixed martial arts and move past it and get into the mainstream media. If you choose not to do that, you can complain all you want about not making money. Because if you're a pay-per-view partner, like Dana White says, as you are selling pay-per-views, you're headlining pay-per-views, you got to sell. You got to put that extra time in. And believe me, after it's all said and done, when your career's all said and done, you do not want any regrets. You don't want to look back and say, coulda, shoulda, woulda. Believe me, that's what so many fighters are doing nowadays. Guys that have competed under the UFC roster, guys to this day that are contacting me and saying, hey, can you hook me up with a spot on your show? Can you hook me up with some money over here in terms of doing some appearances and blah, 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 all that stuff there. But when they were under the UFC banner and I was asking them to come on the show, they would say, no, I got to train, I got to do this. And I'm like, guys, this is your peak. It's a small window. You got to do this. They would never do it. So it is what it is. It is what it is for another day. One guy who's stepping in there, though, is Tyron Woodley. And Dana White, when he was over in Asia just a couple of days ago, was stopped by Lily from MMA in Asia. You're going to hear it's a little loud in there. I'm assuming they were in a restaurant. But the whole situation with Tyron Woodley stepping in for Hector Lombard to take on Dun Young Kim. How did this come to be? Dana White addressed that when he was speaking to Lily.
I woke up this morning to an email chain going back and forth between Lorenzo and Joe Silva that he was out and, you know, a list of possibilities. And I said, no way, man. You know, we can't go from the number six guy in the world to somebody below six. So Woodley just fought. He came out of that fight uninjured. He's ranked number four in the world. So we called Woodley up and Woodley jumped on the opportunity and took the fight.
And that's hopefully a fight that we'll see on Sportsnet 360, or perhaps we're going to see it on UFC Fight Pass, which continues to expand, by the way. And for all you grappling lovers, Metamoris lovers, Dana White gave a hint of perhaps adding that grappling organization to UFC Fight Pass.
Absolutely something we'd look at for Fight Pass. I think people are going to be surprised by the things that are going to pop up on Fight Pass. I said it when the thing first came out. It started out as a way to give the library to all the fans. You know, they'd have full access. And it just keeps evolving, and it's only going to get better and better.
Dana was also asked about Nick Diaz. Is he going to be coming back anytime soon?
Nick Diaz, if not this year, probably next year. If not next year, probably the year after. Who knows with them? We'll see. We'll see.
That's just a small glimpse. Make sure you check out the full interview online via YouTube, but we can't waste any more time. Joining us on the line right now is the man taking on Jeremy Stephens in the main event in San Antonio, Mr. Cub Swanson. Good day, Mr. Swanson. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking.
No problem. All right. Well, listen, first things first, congratulations. A 5-round fight, main event for Zuffa, the very first time in your career. You got to be excited for that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's the first time in my career since I started that I've ever had a main event. And, you know, I'm honored.
Now, you're taking on a guy in Jeremy Stephens, not the exact original opponent I'm assuming you were envisioning, correct?
Yeah, correct.
Now, when they offered you Jeremy, what went through your mind? Because I'm sure you were looking at that title shot. Ricardo Lamas got it before you. Chad Mendes gets it. And based on the last fight with Dennis Seaver, all of us were thinking, you know what, Cub's next. Cub has to get that title shot. It didn't happen, and there's been a long layoff. So can you walk us through that whole experience?
Well, yeah. They kept telling me just to keep holding on and see what was coming next. They gave Lamas the title fight. And we were waiting for an opponent. Nothing was happening. They told me might as well just wait till after the fight. We waited, and then Aldo was deciding whether he was going to stay in the division. We were just still trying to figure things out. And then they, told me they were going to give the next title fight to Chad Mendes. Because in that whole time, we have the same amount of fights and wins, and technically he's ahead of me in the rankings. So they told me they wanted me to fight one more fight, and gave me the name of Stevens, and I was like, all right. And, you know, he's another tough opponent, but I do what I got to do.
Now, he's a tough guy, especially since relocating over to California, training over there with Alliance MMA. Since dropping to 145, he's 3-0. He showcased a few different things in his style, but he's still, in my opinion, I could be wrong, you correct me if I'm wrong, he will go back to that old style where he's just swinging for the fences. But he does show an improvement in his game from fight to fight. What's your assessment on Jeremy Stephens?
Oh, yeah, definitely that. He is training at a very good gym at Alliance. And you know, he has made some improvements I've seen in his fights. But at the end of the day, he's definitely swinging for the fences and just trying to knock my head off. So, I've I've trained really hard for this fight. I feel like I know what's coming, and I'm prepared for it.
You take a look at his southpaw stance. In previous opponents that you've competed against, do you see any similarities, or is he a completely different fighter altogether?
I believe he's not southpaw.
No, he's not southpaw? Because I'm looking at a couple of fights here. Okay, I could be wrong. Go ahead.
But I think his last fight with Elkins, I think he switched a few times.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't bother me because I spar, you know, we train out of Jackson's, and when I train at home, I spar everybody, southpaw and regular, and then I switch myself. So I try to always, you know, not make my sparring too specific because opponents change and, you know, people change every fight. So I try not to be too specific just for situations like that.
I want to make a correction while I'm sitting here on the air with you. I'm actually looking at a Spencer Fisher fight before I came on the line with you, and that's where the southpaw mentality came in. I apologize to you and to listeners right now. You are listening to UFC Central. On the line with me right now is Cub Swanson, arguably the hottest commodity at 145 pounds in a division that continues to build under the Ultimate Fighting Championship banner. Cub, when you look at this division, you know, a year or two ago when it first came over from the WEC, people were like, ah, you know, whatever, but people that had been around in the fight game for a while said, give it time, give it time. Do you think it's there right now where people are starting to realize how deep this division actually is?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, when we came over from the WEC, we had a huge chip on our shoulder, you know, just to prove to everybody that, you know, we can throw down, we're exciting, and we deserve our chance at main events. And you know, I honestly feel this is, you know, one of the best divisions in the UFC. I think for the 155-pound division, it was a little bit easier to showcase because it was basically UFC versus WEC once they made the crossover. So it made things interesting right away. For us, it didn't become interesting until a lot of the 155-pounders started dropping down into our division, and everybody thought they were going to dominate, and it's just not the case.
Now, you've had quite the arduous road leading up to this fight here. You've had so many ups, so many downs, so many dark days. I'm just wondering, what kept you motivated, especially with some of the brutal injuries you've endured, the time out of the cage? What did you go through mentally to keep going and not say, you know what, I'm done, I quit, I'm out of here?
My stubbornness. that honestly just, every time somebody told me, maybe this is it for you, or maybe you should think about other options, it just made me want it more. And I've always told myself, you can do better. You can do better. Come on. And, you know, looking back, it's crazy to think I've been doing this 11 years, especially with so many ups and downs. But I'm very proud that I stuck with it. And it just feels, you know, unbelievable to see where I'm at right now and to know that I can make it all the way.
You're listening to Cub Swanson right here on UFC Central. Make sure you follow Cub online via Twitter at Showdown Joe, or at Cub Swanson. Follow yours truly at Showdown Joe. Throw in a hashtag Killer Cub to put a smile on his face. All right, main event, 5 rounds. What are you expecting from Jeremy Stephens in terms of, let's say, the first 2-3 rounds? Because this thing could go 5, but then again, with your precision and your speed, his power, this thing could end at any time. How do you prepare for a fight to take on a guy like this?
You know, just staying composed, keeping my vision good. I think that's the biggest thing is keeping track of his power, knowing when he's going to throw it and just, you know, beating him to the punch or making him miss and making him pay. Really just being a smart fighter, and I'm very confident in that.
Now, I got to ask you this. Let's say you emerge victorious on Saturday night. The UFC is holding 2 events on the same day, one from Auckland, New Zealand. Then they go to San Antonio. You and Jeremy are the last fight, the very last fight of the day. You emerge victorious. Joe Rogan, or whether it's Brian Stann or Kenny Florian, whomever is doing the interviewing in the post-fight, are you going to call out the winner of Chad Mendes or Jose Aldo, or will you just simply let the UFC make that decision?
I think I should let the fans make that decision. I think they have a lot of power, and you know, I think that's the biggest thing is I need to win the fans over just on a larger scale. This is just a big opportunity for me to to go out there and gain a, you know, a lot of fans being the main event. And that's my goal. It's just, you know, I want the fans to want it for me, because of course I want it. But if the fans can demand a title fight, I know I'll get it. And that would make me proud, knowing that pretty much they elected me.
I honestly, Cub, I think there's no ifs, ands, or buts that you emerge victorious on Saturday night. That title shot will be granted. But let's look in a Hollywood script in a perfect world. If you could have that perfect fight on Saturday night, that'll win the fans over. That'll make it no ifs, ands, or buts for Sean Shelby, Joe Silva, and Dana White to say Cub Swanson does take on Chad Mendes and or Jose Aldo. What would that perfect fight be?
Just me going out there and looking like the best I've ever been, flowing and dominating from the first bell and getting a knockout by the end of the first round.
There you go. Thank you very much for your time. I want to wish you the best of luck on Saturday night. We can catch your fight on Sportsnet 360. Thank you, Cub.
Thank you, bud.
All right, don't let that calm nature of Cub Swanson fool you. He'll be very, very explosive on Saturday night when he takes on Jeremy Stephens. All right, that's a wrap for me. Thank you very much to Cub, to Dana White, to George St. Pierre, Boss Rudin for the interview, Lily from MMA Asia as well, and all you guys for listening. You've been listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.